Wherever and whenever you retire, you'll likely have some assistance from automation. In our ongoing series, The Last Job in Hawaii, we sat down with startup mentor and artificial intelligence fan, Tak Lo. We spoke as he was returning home to Hong Kong after his participation in last week's East Meets West conference. I asked him what could make the difference in AI becoming the best or the worst thing to happen to humanity.
It's very easy in many ways to fear what you don't know. But I think it's almost a philosophical question in the sense whether you do believe that that unknown can be a good thing or a bad thing. Those in tech tend to think that this could be a good thing. AI can be a good thing. And the fact of the matter is no one knows. No one knows where this can go. No one knows where AI machine learning can take us. And so it is a philosophical decision to say whether one believes that it can be a good thing or a bad thing.
What has to be in place for us to keep it from becoming sort of an apocalyptic vision versus one that's helpful for humanity?
Yeah, so I think, there's a couple of principles. One principle, I think, is the democratization of AI. So what we're trying to do with Accelerate Zeroth is to back entrepreneurs and founders that want to deal with AI. And so the principle is the more people that deal with AI, the better. There's more built knowledge of how to deal with this particular type of technology, more people building companies on top of it. It's just, but it's generally a bigger community of people because you don't know what you don't know. The worst situation is there's a rogue person that's building some algorithm that could be harmful and no one knows anything about it. And so if we can build at least a community or a form of people that appreciate this technology, you can start knowing what's unknown. I think second is the participation of regulators. As much as I'm not the biggest fan of regulation, I think there needs to be some sort of understanding of the regulatory constraint of this. And what I mean by that, this is a very simple example of self-driving cars, right? Every car manufacturer will have a different view on their algorithm in the sense of a car has to make a choice. Who does it protect? They have four passengers, 1, 2, 3, 4, varying ages of the four passengers, then the people outside of the car, and then protecting the car, the actual asset itself. And so I don't think there are clear definitions of what protection that is, that algorithm. And so I think getting some sort of alignment between all the manufacturers, and in a broader sense, getting alignment from kind of the machine learning community about what is government's role to play in this, I think is quite important. And then one side corollary of that is the ethical implications, not only in the car example, but some people have suggested a kill switch. In the sense, being able to, if an AI has, an algorithm goes amok, how does one activate that switch to kill the algorithm? So I think more discussion needs to be had to understand what that looks like, how to enforce that, how to get people to build that thing or build that kill switch into the algorithm. So I think a couple of these elements still needs to be kind of fleshed out.
For a lot of people, the fear is coming not from what might happen with government regulation or with well-intended development of AI, but what would happen if you have people who are truly set out to do harm? What do you tell people when they come to you with that kind of fear?
I think that's a very legitimate fear. I think I'll draw parallels to any type of technology, right, or weapon or any asset can become bad. Can become rogue. There is no answer to that. There is no panacea for that. It's just more amplified with AI.
What about other countries? I mean, we've just watched what we have been told happened during this last election. And the idea that one country might be able to control another country's AI that is involved with government, that's involved in the private sector, somehow get in there and cause a great deal of harm and disruption. How do you see that developing in a way that allows some sense of control?
In some ways, it's so early that governments haven't yet responded to some degree. But I think the White House, there was a White House report on AI. There was a strong recommendation to start promoting and start developing technologies and start supporting research on deep learning on AI. So that will compel other governments to start building their own capabilities. The one thing that I and other people in the community don't want is an arms race, right? You know, a stockpile of talent. Some might compel them to try to work on the government side as well. There are different incentives on both sides. And I think the public sector needs to realize, you know, this type of technology is better if it's democratized, if it, there's a community around it, if there's no kind of arms race.
What do you think that we should be looking for next, or what do you think is going to be the next iteration of AI that will be more broadly shown in the public sector?
Yeah, this is where it starts getting exciting. So again, philosophically, maybe I'm biased, but I do look, you know, on the positive side of this stuff. So I just bought a Google Home. So I think in the home, I think it'll be pretty interesting, obviously with self-driving cars. You know, I think voice is going to be pretty interesting medium in 2017. Glasses, visual interface is going to be very interesting medium. And so machine learning has some component to play in this. There's an item called a Hear One, which basically is a hearing device, but it augments your hearing, can filter out certain things and start personalizing for you. What this all means is at some point, if we want to combine this into one general AI, you have things, interfaces, auditory interfaces and visual interfaces that have been optimized already. And it could combine together to form, you know, a general intelligence, if you will.
And I would imagine that would have a lot of applications for assisted technology.
Oh, yeah, totally. I think AI will take away some jobs. That is a certainty.
Specifically what?
Theoretically, what AI can do is reduce human variability, right? Human error. Jobs that have a single purpose, routine driving, routine chores, routine scheduling, anything that's very well defined, even accounting, right, has this very well defined rules and systems. Even certain law practices, right?
Research,
right? Very well defined rules, very well defined systems. First to be automated, because that's essentially what a machine can do better than a person, is define where the system is and be able to optimize the system. That will free people to do the things that should have human error and variability. So my wife is an artist. In art, you should have human variability. That is the process to which things become art.
And a conduit to humanity.
Exactly, right. So to our discussion early on, right, as we get more technology into play, as it permeates our life, I think the human interaction gets more celebrated. The human voice gets more celebrated. The human relationships will actually be much more premiumized. People will search out for it because it will be even more important, because most of the time you will be interacting with machines. But I'm biased. I believe in the theory I call positivity of AI.
What do you see happening in Hawaii with job loss or job change because of AI?
If it had an argument, that would be for Hawaii to embrace technology, because the fact is, because I reflect on it, because I'm an advisor to the Estonian government. Estonia has a population of 1.35 million. But Skype has come from Estonia, transfer-wise, and they've really embraced the fact that, you know what, we're small, we're either going to be behind technology, which is kind of the natural inertia, or be in front of it. And so if there's something I would say about Hawaii is it might be because there are a lot of reasons why it should be behind, the next best step in which it could play is being ahead. Then Hawaii can work with technology to fit their lives rather than be reactive and just receive shocks of what technology will put into the system.
TalkLo creates startup leaders in Asia and is a partner in Zerith, an AI-focused early-stage funding program. He was in Honolulu last week for the East Meets West Conference. A longer version of our conversation is on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.